Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens, at the heart of Irish homes for over 40 years. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Welcome back. Áine Kerr here, sitting in for Claire. Now, as you were hearing in the headlines, the Middle East has been rocked by two strikes overnight in two different capital cities against senior figures in two militia groups backed by Iran. The first, in the Lebanese capital Beirut, targeted a senior advisor in Hezbollah. The second, in the Iranian capital Tehran, killed the leader of Hamas, Ismail Haniyeh, who was there to attend the inauguration of Iran's new president. In a moment, we'll get analysis from Professor of US and International Politics at the Clinton Institute in UCD, Scott Lucas. But for the latest, we're joined by Middle East correspondent with Sky News, Alistair Bunkle. Alistair, to come to you first, how significant a figure was the Hamas leader, Ismail Haniyeh?
Well, he was very significant. He was the political leader of the group outside of Gaza. So the leader inside Gaza, who's still alive, is Yahya Sinwar. He evades Israel's military. He evades capture. But Ismail Haniyeh was the political leader in exile, based in Qatar, but traveled pretty freely around much of the Middle East. The fact that he was in Tehran, he was filmed yesterday going around some sites in Tehran. So he didn't sort of show outwardly any fear for his life, but the Israelis have put a target on his back, target on the back of any senior Hamas figure, and they decided that this was their opportunity to take him out whilst he was in Tehran. The other thing I should say, he was hugely significant in the ongoing mediation talks to try and breached a ceasefire between the two sides.
This was a pre-dawn airstrike in the Iranian capital. What more do we know about it?
Well, it targeted the house where he was staying very, very specifically. That and the fact that the Israelis managed to kill Fuad Shukri in southern Beirut, in the building where he was yesterday, are two, you know, aside from the potential consequences and the justifications, et cetera, which will be argued and debated over around the world, it is a huge coup for Israeli intelligence, for the Mossad, in the space of, 12 hours to assassinate two senior figures, one in Hamas and one in Hezbollah, and to do so successfully, to fly Israeli missiles, which we believe were launched outside of Iranian airspace, but to get them inside Iran and into the exact building where Ismail Haniyeh was staying, shows that they have penetrated pretty deep inside Iranian intelligence, and that will spook the Iranians at the time.
Yeah, to that end, is it raising major questions yet about security breaches?
Well, it will be internally. That is for sure. There's a national security meeting of Iran's National Security Council. They will be very worried about how the Israelis were able to ascertain exactly where Haniyeh was staying. Now, the Israelis have got a long track record of taking out people who they perceive to be their enemies abroad, particularly Iranians linked with the nuclear. They have done it in Iran before, but this shows real audacity, taking out a senior Hamas figure a couple of days after the inauguration of the new Iranian president, and in Tehran, which is the capital, if you like, of the axis of resistance against Israel, and to do that at this time with so much at stake, as I say, shows audacity.
And given events in Tehran, as you described them, but also coming just hours after the Israeli attack in Beirut, what's the international response now, given both of these strikes?
Well, the response within the Middle East broadly is huge condemnation of Israel's actions, particularly the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh. I think there'll be real concern over the immediate prospect of ceasefire talks at the moment, with his him not being present anymore. I would say, though, from my perspective, I didn't really feel, for all the talk coming from Washington, I didn't really feel like the ceasefire talks were making a huge amount of progress. Whether that was Netanyahu's fault, whether it was the fault of Hamas, we can argue over. It might be, and I know there are some Israelis privately believe that perhaps now actually this could accelerate ceasefire talks because it might push Hamas and its backers to finally take a deal. I'm not sure that is the case, but the consequences of it are going to be playing out in the coming hours. As for the killing of Fuad Shukri, the senior commander in Hezbollah, I don't think you're going to get any backlash against the Israelis from Washington. He was a wanted man by the Americans. He was considered to be behind the killing of around 240 Marines many years ago. And he had a bounty on his head with the Americans. And I do not think that they will be crying tears for his death at all. But of course, everybody is very, very worried about what comes next. And the Israelis have made it pretty clear, I mean, although they have sort of lit this torch paper this time round, they've made it pretty clear that from their position, that is their actions over for now. We'll wait and see whether Iran decides to take direct action against Israel, or more likely, from my perspective, use their proxies like Hamas, well, whatever capabilities Hamas have got left, and Hezbollah to have some sort of response.
Is there, with events there since Saturday, of course, in Golan Heights, is there continued, you sense, efforts at diplomatic diplomacy to try and ensure that there isn't an escalation here? In parallel, as you're saying, you've got Lebanon's PM talking about this being a blatant Israeli aggression. You don't yet have Hezbollah making any statement, and I think initially denying responsibility. But are there real fears of escalations there now still?
The problem is you know, I'm not really sure who you look to now for leadership in the Middle East. You know, if in the past we had looked to Washington to be, you know, at least a major player in it, well, the situation surrounding President Biden now is such that, let's be frank, he's pretty much a lame duck president. He has not had an easy relationship with Benjamin Netanyahu over recent months anyway. And I think Netanyahu will now conclude that he has to, the Israelis have to dictate the facts on the ground. They can't allow Washington to do it or wait for Washington to do it. And where leadership's coming from elsewhere in the Middle East is unclear. I mean, even within Lebanon itself, Hassan Nasrallah, who is the leader of Hezbollah, is not supported by many of the Lebanese who don't want war, who see what Hezbollah are doing and think it's going to lead them down the path of their own destruction.
Okay, well, thank you for bringing us through events in Tehran and Beirut. Middle East correspondent with Sky News, Alistair Bunkle. To bring you in, Scott Lucas, if we can start first with that attack in Tehran and Ismail Haniyeh, the man leading efforts to agree a ceasefire. What impact does his assassination have now on those efforts to bring a sense of calm and a sense of a ceasefire being possible?
Well, first of all, the ceasefire talks were already effectively stalled out. And I must emphasize, not primarily by Hamas, but primarily because of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And those talks are now put on hold for some time. They're put on hold, of course, because Hamas, at the very least, would have to replace Haniyeh and therefore its negotiating team. But in a broader sense, I think they're put on hold because part of the Israeli message is not that, you know, we're going to look for a compromise for this three-phase plan in which there'd be an exchange of hostages in return for Israel withdrawing its forces. It's actually a message which says to Hamas, you have to capitulate, you have to surrender. In a broader sense, what Israel has done is sent a very deadly message, not just to Hamas, but to Hezbollah and to their backer, Iran, in terms of what happens across the region. You may remember back in April, Iran sent its own message with a demonstration attack with almost 100 missiles fired on Israel. Israel lobbed a few missiles back in response at Iran, but that wasn't much of a message. 3 months later, they've made this clear using Hezbollah's killing of children at the weekend as a pretext, which is, we will hit you and we will hit you hard.
Hamas and Hezbollah are both backed by Iran, but this is also a strike on Iranian soil. And you talk about events in April. What options do you think Tehran is likely looking at this morning in terms of a response?
Well, first of all, let me give you the latest, because it's very interesting. I think Iran's in a little bit of disarray because they had a meeting of their Supreme National Security Council this morning. And the Supreme Leader came out and he gave the message I would expect, that usually follows every Israeli attack, which is thumping the chest and saying, we will have revenge, they will pay. But just a few minutes ago, the new first vice president, because Iran just changed its government, the new first vice president, Mohammad Aref, said, no, we're not going to escalate this in the Middle East. In other words, he pulled that rhetoric back. Now, whether he'll be chided for that, whether he stepped out of line, we'll have to see. But Iran right now is in trouble because they've got a serious economic situation in the country. They've got a serious social situation where you've had, of course, nationwide protest over issues like compulsory hijab. They've got a problem with legitimacy, with a very low voter turnout in the recent elections. And a lot of people in Iran do not want them escalating tensions in areas like Lebanon, like Gaza, even. And so I agree with Alistair Bunkel that I don't think Iran's going to go for a direct confrontation with the Israelis, but you might see indirect attacks, for example, through their allies, such as the Houthis in Yemen, and possibly, although I think it's risky, through the Iranian-led militias in Iraq and in Syria hitting U.S. positions.
So Iran potentially pulling back here in terms of escalation. What of Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu? What do you think happens next there and the options he may be exploring with his government?
In the region, I think Israel drew a line. I mean, they said yesterday, they flagged up, look, we're going to make a harsh but contained response to the Hezbollah killing of those children in the Syrian Golan Heights. And we expected, at least I certainly expected them to hit Hezbollah in Beirut with a targeted assassination. I did not expect them to go inside Iran. That has upped the stakes. But I think the Israelis are signaling, okay, we've made our point. What I think this does, which is perhaps even more important, is it buys time for Benjamin Netanyahu. He was under a great deal of pressure because Israel is in this open-ended war in Gaza after 10 months. It has not gotten its hostages back. It has not gotten the destruction of Hamas as Netanyahu promised. It, in effect, was risking being in a quagmire, which risked Netanyahu's political and legal future. He buys himself a bit of time because he can say, we scored a victory over Iran. How much time he bought for himself, we'll see as the attention returns to Gaza.
And with that time, if he is buying time right now, Scott, do you think there is within that window an opportunity for renewed diplomatic efforts? Is there still a role to be played by the United States, despite the fact that they're 97 days out now from an election there?
I'll answer that in two ways. First, no, I don't expect a renewed push for a ceasefire because I think Israel, a combination of Netanyahu's personal desire and the Israeli military making a point with Iran, I think they have set the ceasefire talks to the side. Secondly, I don't think that the U.S. can be the broker here to renew that process. But, and this is a very important caveat, it's even more important for the international community because that ceasefire may not come soon to say, look, we don't want escalation in the region. We don't want this spreading, and we want the attention to be paid to the welfare of Gazan civilians. It is important that that line, which has been emphasized by the Taoiseach, by the Irish government, and many other governments, that has to be said again and again and again because of this prospect that at least Benjamin Netanyahu is treating this as an open-ended conflict in which civilians are expendable.
Okay, well, we'll continue to watch for updates from Beirut and Tehran. Thank you for that. Professor of US and International Politics at Clinton Institute in UCD, Scott Lucas. We'll be back after these. And we're going to the ads.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.